ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So today we're reading from Canto 5, last chapter. We're on text 31. So it's a lot of prose text, and it's huge chunks. So we'll just do the translation as we go through until we reach a purport. So there's about four texts before we reach a purport. So we're starting on text 31. And from 31, then 35 has a purport. So we'll try to speak something as we go through. So I'll just read the translation through, and then we'll start the class through that, because it's huge chunks of text. So text 31 then, the translation. There are men and women in this world who sacrifice human beings to Bhai Rama or Bhadrakali and then eat their victims' flesh. Those who perform such sacrifices are taken after death to the abode of Yamaraj, where their victims, having taken the form of Rakshasas, cut them into pieces with sharpened swords. Just as in this world, the man-eaters drink their victims' blood, dancing and singing in jubilation, their victims now enjoy drinking the blood of the sacrifices and celebrating in the same way. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Tadate Swabhadatikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavanamsya Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Tam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakamsthi Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyachade Satharine Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So before we start, I'd like to humbly ask the blessings of all the devotees, senior devotees sitting here, so that we may say something to glorify Srimad Bhagavatam and for our own purification. We've been hearing over the past few weeks very vivid and graphic, really graphic audio and sound of what this place of hell would actually be like. Not only have we been hearing about the place, we've been hearing about the reactions that people who go there, what do they experience? So having heard this, we've heard almost like, what, 22 hellish planets in this chapter that is described. And we haven't completed it yet. After today, there'll be another 5 verses left of this chapter. But it's been very powerful, and very deep samskaras have been impressed on our minds. So we'd like to ask you then, what have you gathered from this chapter so far? What has it meant to you? Is it just entertainment? Oh yeah, you throw somebody off the cliff and there's no water there. Like a mosquito. Or what does it mean to us spiritually? What are we supposed to extract from this chapter as sadhakas? We've been hearing that in other spiritual traditions, this idea of using phobia, fear, as a medium of evangelizing, preaching, is very, very powerful. This is the main medium by which other traditions, religious traditions, preach. But none of them actually have something concrete about this place. We were discussing the last time, the best description given in like in the Christian tradition is that of Dante, the Italian person who's written a description of hell, but he's written it as a poem, as poetic or philosophical. It's not Shastrically. So who has the Shastric evidence of this place? And we were saying the last time how we could geoposition the hellish planet in the whole universal structure, cosmology. This is how precise Srimad Bhagavatam is. So the description we just heard of just now was quite strong, quite vivid. We would never want to be in that situation. But unfortunately, it's a reality of the current world. We may not know it, but it is very prominent in the world these days. We've heard examples of this from the Bhagavatam also, of Jad Bharat, who was captured by the Kali worshippers and who was taken away to be sacrificed. So just to show you, if you can see here, I don't know if you can, how far back you can see this, but this is like a live ritual being enacted. This is exactly what we're hearing about here today. So there's a person, this is a girl here, and you can see the person, the Purohit, the priest in this kind of ritual is ready, she's been held down, and he's ready to sink this huge dagger into the chest and open the heart cavity and remove the heart from, because the heart is the seat of all energy. So this is one of the ways they do this sacrifice, what we're hearing about here. The other way is beheading. So it's not like this is something, someone here in India. This is a Indian priest. This even looks like a Western girl here. And you can see this photo was taken right before this person could commence the sacrifice. So it's not just like a story, it's a reality of life today. I'll show you one more. This is one more here of human sacrifice. And you can see the person is laid out just like as you would do an animal. So it's not, it's something that is not to create fear, but it's for education. Because if we know what's out there, it's a great impetus then to become serious in our Krishna consciousness. We realize what Krishna means by Dukhalayam Nashashvatam. It's not just some sloka in the Gita, which is very nice to quote to the materialistic people, but it's a reality of life. It's a reality of life. Here's the last one. This is also one of human sacrifice. You can see two pots at the bottom here. And what do you think is collecting in that? So exactly what we're hearing about here today. So it's a very vivid aspect of reality. So as we're ending this chapter now, there's only 5 verses to go. As I said, I'd like to ask you, what have we learnt from this? Have we learnt just some graphic imagery which is going to disturb the mind? Or what is it as sadhikas we can learn from this? So it's something we have to think about, because this chapter in particular is the root that stems the unfolding of the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam. So you can imagine what an experience Parikshit Maharaj must have had just to hear this chapter. Okay, he's a king, so Kshatriyas deal with blood and fighting and killing. What about the sadhus who's hearing it firsthand? The sadhus sitting here, the sages of Namasaranya, most of them are Brahmins. Can you imagine, you tell people of that era, of that epoch, of that age, that in the future in Kali Yuga, this is what will happen. People will kill each other like this and sacrifice and eat each other like this. Can you imagine how those sadhus sitting there? It's unbelievable that a human being can reduce himself to that level. It's unbelievable that a human being can reduce himself to that level. So the graphicness is not to create phobia, fear, but it is to educate that this is the nature, this is the real nature of the world. This is the real nature of what the world can be. So Arjuna, you know, in the 11th chapter of Gita, Arjuna was also terrified when he saw a similar situation, when he saw the universal form and he started seeing Krishna in the universal feature, chewing up the demons and drinking their blood and things like that. He was, as a Vedic Kshatriya, can you imagine what is a Vedic Kshatriya fear? Nothing. But what happened to him? He got terrified. He got scared. So it's a very powerful experience. And I can tell you, personally, we had some encounter with this kind of thing. So it's not so prominent, although I've heard one or two stories here in Vrindavan. But it's not so prominent in this area so much. Prabhupada actually speaks about this in the Putana story of the Krishna book. Prabhupada mentions there that in certain parts of India, there are these witches who catch little children and do the same kind of thing. So he mentioned that it's a reality. It's not just some fictitious story. So yesterday, while I was preparing this class, so one of the brahmacharis came into the room there, and I had a video clip that I was reviewing, not of this, but of something I'll play for you just now also. And he says, wow, do people actually treat the animals like that? They actually kill and treat the animals like that? He couldn't believe it until he saw it. And then he said, you know, Prabhuji, before I came to Krishna consciousness, I also did something like that. And I said, yes, didn't we all? The fact that we participated in, you know, abominable kinds of foodstuffs, we contribute to this. So this today's one is quite graphic. It's human, describing, you know, human consumption. So it's very graphic. So like we were saying, even in Vrindavan, I heard at least of one instance where one devotee was, one Western girl was captured like this. So, you know, during Kartik, we mentioned to the devotees, don't go alone, don't go anywhere alone, don't travel alone. And we've been hearing of all other kinds of terrible things that have been happening to devotees in the area. So take heed of this firstly, that if you're going anywhere, don't go alone. Be careful, it's not a safe place out there. And who knows, something like this could happen. There are many kind of tantric, this kind of practice. In Indian culture it's called tantric, in Western culture it's called witchcraft. So it's very powerful because the demoniac consciousness is very prevalent on the planet right now. So it fuels this kind of behavior very, very strongly. So you can imagine if it wasn't through Sankirtan, how difficult it would be. Thanks to the Sankirtan Yajna, this is being checked. So having said this then, how do we understand this ghastliness? Because if you, in Nakti of Devotion, Rupa Goswami describes there's 12 rasas, 5 primary and 7 secondary. And one of those 7 secondary is this ghastliness. Because we get shocked by this, right? Like when I showed you these pictures, I saw some reactions here. Was like, shook, is this real? You know, could this happen to somebody? And that shock hits you of the reality, ghastliness. So it's one expression of Krishna also being all attractive. Because the definition of Krishna means he's all attractive. So if he's all attractive, he can attract in any feature. Therefore, Narsingadev comes in this ghastly feature a bit, right? With tearing up the demon and the blood and all of these things. But even in that feature, he's attractive. He's still attractive. This is what it means to be absolute. That's why that definition of what it means to be God means he's all attractive, not sometimes. In all situations, he's attractive. So Krishna has this feature. So what we've been hearing about is just not like some horrific movie. It seems to be like that, right? It's like people being boiled and cooked and pierced. And now why would somebody get such heavy reactions like that? It's quite severe, right? So they must have done something to warrant this kind of reaction. So we know even Western minds cannot like understand this phenomena, but they know, especially like in medical science, there's a phenomena called pre-death traumatic distress disorder. Just before somebody dies, they go into this frenzy. They're coming to catch me, they're coming to hurt me, they're coming to take me away. People start screaming out like this. So it's a known fact that people have this experience before death. So why is this such a vivid expression for us to know? Well, Krishna thinks it's quite significant because in the Bhagavad Gita, he dedicates one chapter entirely to this concept. So it must be quite significant. In that chapter, chapter 16, Divine and Demoniac Nature, Krishna speaks just the first 3 verses where he describes the divine nature. And almost the entirety of the second, of the rest of the chapter is describing this nature of the demoniac thought. The way the demon thinks. And if you read those, you realize, wow, you know, this sounds like me. It could be me. I remember in one BTG article, Jayan Vaitamaraj once wrote there, he says, you know, how do you recognize a demon? And he says, well, he could be your postman, or he could be your grocer, or he could be your neighbor, or he could be you. It could be you, because you realize sometimes what thoughts go through the mind is, you wonder, you know, I'm trying to be so serious, and I'm trying to chant attentively and do the sadhana, but where are these ideas coming from? How do they surface like this? So it needs to be checked regularly. That's why Krishna dedicates one chapter to this. And it's the bottom end actually of the banyan tree. That is actually, it's interesting because in the current section in the Gita classes that are going on, we're also discussing this. So how to deal with this? It needs a change of consciousness. Just killing a demon doesn't achieve anything. This is Lord Chaitanya's mood. That's why he's come. It needs a change of consciousness. Because by changing consciousness, one can change his state of mind, his mindset.
Jai Radha Shyam Krishna Balaram Gornitai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So it needs a change of consciousness. I remember once in the earlier days, this was like maybe 20 years back, we were doing Food for Life in an African township. And while the Food for Life was going on and everything, then one of the local guides, he appreciated it. So he took us for a walk around. And as we came to one of these homes, then he said, "You see that house there? There's a so-called tantric or a witchcraft person that stays there." And immediately I said, "Oh, okay, Prabhu, I think they're calling us, you know, maybe we should go back now." And he says, "Well, it's prominent in this area." And then I, out of curiosity, asked him, you know, "What do they do?" And he says, "Well, this person, you heard of in the African tradition, they throw bones. So many times it's told that it's bones of animals, but it's not. It's actually certain joints of the human body which is used. And at the same time, then they use like skulls and things like that to offer things in." So you can imagine it's a very, very low form of worship. And it's very prominent, but it's very undercover. Not many people, because people don't want to get into it. "No, don't talk about it, don't get into it." But the reality is, if you are educated, then you understand how the nature of the world is going, and this is an impetus to become serious. So one of the reasons why atheism is so prominent in the world is because people don't want to take responsibility for their actions. It's very easy to say, "Well, there's nothing happening, you know, I can't see it, so it's nothing happening." So there's so many things you cannot see. Does it mean that you can't see the air? Does it mean it's not happening? Nothing is moving, you know. There's so many aspects of life that we don't see. So atheism is very prominent in this. That's why it's important that we catch the spirit of preaching and empowering our knowledge with the Srimad Bhagavatam, because all questions are answered here. This is the manual for life. This is the manual to live one's life. So all aspects of life is discussed and all aspects of life is covered. Now why would a person want to consume another person? There's so many other things to eat. Why would you want to do this? So technically this is called cannibalism. And cannibalism is divided into two parts. One is called criminal cannibalism, and the other one is called ritualistic cannibalism. So, you know, sometimes you may have heard of aircrafts that have, crashed, and people have nothing to eat. So, what do? They take the remains of whatever other people were there. And that is criminal cannibalism. And then the other one, ritualistic, that's what we are hearing about here today. So it's interesting, there's actually two aspects to this. Again, it's just for education. It's not something we relish talking about. But if it is in the Bhagavatam, it means it has a purpose. And that purpose is to educate us about the reality of life. So there's some cultures in the world that still practice this. Prabhupada, I couldn't find the reference on it, but Prabhupada, I heard this mentioned about the old man that they throw off the roof. Have you heard of this? That when the man is too old in the African traditions, then they take him up to the roof and swaha, just drop him off. And, you know, consume him after that. So that's one aspect that I've heard. And also in certain countries like West Guinea, Papua West Guinea, and certain aspects, even certain tribal people in Africa, there's one tribe called the Korowai, and they up to now practice ritualistic cannibalism. So what we've been hearing about. So let's see what Prabhupada put in the translation here. He says, "In this life, some people give shelter to animals and birds that come to them for protection. This is the text number 32 now. So animals and birds that come for protection. And in the village, in villages and forests, from villages and forests. And after making them believe that they will protect, such people pierce them with lances and threads and play with them like toys, giving them great pain. After death, such people are brought by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Sula Prota, where their bodies are pierced with sharp needle-like lances. They suffer from hunger and thirst. So not only is the body just being pierced, but also you have thirst and hunger, but there's nothing to eat. So we know we go a few hours without food. I mean, right now, many of us are hungry for breakfast. So can you imagine living in an environment where there's the urge of hunger, but there's nothing to replenish it. So it's very uncomfortable. And sharp beak birds, so not only that, sharp beak birds such as vultures and herons come at them from all sides. Tear at their bodies. Tortured and suffering, they can then remember the sinful activities they committed in the past. So not only the suffering is there, they have immediate memory. They have memory of, oh, this is what I did. That's why I'm suffering like this. So we've heard this very graphic description of animals being tortured like this. So there's a little documentary here that's for a minute that I would like to quickly play. It's a little graphic, but I'd like you to hear it for education and see the reality of the world as it is, because we are kind of protected within the bubble of Krishna consciousness, and we don't know the suffering of others out there. That's why it's so important to preach. Because when you preach, you firsthand feel the suffering of other people. So let's hear some of this, what we've been hearing about, and see if it is a reality of life today.
In look behind the closed doors,
modern farms, hatcheries, and slaughter plants, revealing the journey that animals make from farm to fridge.
So this is from farm to fridge for animals.
For nearly their entire 4-month pregnancies, mother sows are locked in narrow metal stalls barely larger than their own bodies.
So sows are female pigs, and they kept in a place which is just the size of their body.
Many of the animals develop open sores and scratches. Workers often kick, hit, and yell at pigs to move them.
So we heard of that in today's verse. They beat them, kick them, yell at them, beat them.
Soon after birth, piglets are castrated by workers who cut into their skin and rip out their testicles. Next, the workers chop off their tails.
Then the tail is cut off. Do you know what is the tail? The tail has such sensitivity in it that it's part of the vertebral column. If you snap the tail like that, you actually cut the vertebral column, the spinal column. And you do that just that, like it's a piece of paper. Can you imagine what that animal must be going through?
Both of these painful procedures are nearly always done without anesthesia. Many animals die from botched mutilations. Piglets who become sick or injured or who are not growing quickly enough are killed. Killing methods include throwing animals into bins and painfully gassing them with carbon dioxide.
So putting them into bins and gassing them. So we'll hear that in the next verse, where you confine animals to dark wells and granaries and don't give them light and kill them with fumes.
Others are killed by being slammed, head first into the ground.
That sound you're hearing, that's taking the animal and slamming it onto the ground. A living creature. It sounds like what we're hearing about here in the Bhagavatam.
On a factory farm in Ohio, workers killed injured sows by hanging them on a forklift to be slowly strangled to death, a practice defended by the pork industry. Pigs raised for meat typically live only 5 to 6 months, a mere fraction of their natural lifespan in overcrowded pens like this. Workers frequently tattoo the animals with ID numbers by hitting them with metal-spiked mallets.
They tattoo them with, like ID numbers, as if it's just another thing, you just put a stamp on it. But they're using hot metal rods. Now can you understand why the reaction is so heavy for these people? These are the people we're hearing about here. So as I said, I don't want to, create fear in you in some way, but it's educational, because many of us don't realize the reality of the world out there, because we don't consume that kind of food. But look at what these animals are going through. And as a sadhu, as a devotee who's practicing Krishna consciousness, the heart feels out Pandita Samadarshana for everyone, every living entity. And if you know other entities are going through this, then what can be done? When one may say, what can I do then, Prabhu, this is going on? Well, what can we do? We can do something. We can preach. We can preach. We can preach to people, because there are innocent people out there. Just like us. If somebody didn't preach to us, we would be still going on with this lifestyle that we're hearing about. Wouldn't we? But somebody went out of their way to preach to us, to help us understand the real nature of the world. So many of you are preaching, which is fantastic. And for those who are not, be inspired to try to do something in your capacity, whatever you can do. But reach out to people. Reach out to people, because there are many innocent people there who want to change. They don't realize all this is going on. So let's read a little further. Yes, so one of the... In a kingdom, one of the aspects of kingship is called praja, that a king is supposed to take care of his citizens. And animals are part of the citizenship. They are part of the praja. So it's important that one feels connected as part of the universal, or the part of the planet. As one may feel that I have a purpose, I have to do something. I can help, I can share what I've understood about this, and thus change and help the lives of others. So let's read on here. Prabhupada mentioned this also, because to trust, we animals come to you in trust. We know when you go to the goshala, right? How is it when you see a little calf, the baby? It's so trusting, it's so innocent. You feel that bond that naturally comes from animals. They kind of trust human beings very easily. So if we abuse that and actually sacrifice the animal because of that, that's really inhumane. That's completely inhumane. So trust is a very difficult thing to earn. Just like, would you give your trust to somebody? No, it's earned. You earn the person's trust. Just like we know how faithful animals like dogs are. They will give their life for their master. So what level of relationship did he take to build that? Takes quite a lot. Let's move on. Verse 33, translation. Those who in this life are envious serpents, always angry and giving pain to others. So they are always angry. There are people like this who are always angry and they give pain to others. So what happens to those kind of people? Well, let's hear. They fall after death into the hell known as Dandasuka. My dear king, I remember the Parikshit Maharaj is hearing this. And like we said, this gives impetus because of his compassionate nature. He wants to know then what can be done to help these people. And that starts the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. Because in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, what we hear of is the only remedy to help in this age is Harinama eva kevalam. So we will hear very soon on three levels how the holy name had redeemed somebody who was a sinner. On the first level, on the human level, Ajamil. On the second level, on the Asuric level, Vitrasu. And on the third level, on the Devata level, Indra. So these pastimes will come in the sixth canto. And they were all saved by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So we already have an advanced notification about the chanting of the holy names. So if we take it serious and perfect our lives through it and try to help others along the way. So let's move on here. In this hell there are serpents with five or seven hoods. So we have seen in this world, they're called Siamese snake, where they have two heads. Somebody was telling me yesterday they found a snake that had wings. I remember when Indradyumna Maharaj went to Ahovalam for the first time, and he mentioned how on his journey the snake that came up behind him, and his person who was taking him on the trip had to come from behind and kill the snake. And then he was telling him that person, the guide, had a necklace of jewels. And Maharaj asked him, what is this necklace? He said, these are the jewels that come when raindrops fall on a 1,000-year-old cobra. And then these droplets form into jewels. So anybody wearing this will not be attacked by a cobra. And that person also told him at the same time that if a cobra lives to 1,000 years old, then it develops wings. And this is the kind of creature that killed Parikshit Maharaj. So it's interesting how the Bhagavatam, even in Taiwan, there is a sport called snake boxing. Anybody heard of this? In Taiwan, there's a sport called snake boxing where you challenge a king cobra in a boxing ring, and you have to move away from its strikes. It's a sport there. Very, very selected few people. They train, must have tremendous reflexes to avoid the strike of a snake like that. So it's a reality of today, right? Prabhupada goes on, these serpents eat such sinful persons just as snakes eat mice. So the other day I came across a very interesting picture I think it's one of these Photoshop jobs. I don't know how far you can see this, but can you see that anaconda snake there? So it's curled like this, and if you look at the person standing next to him, the thickness of the snake is up to his knee. So, okay, it's a superimposed image, but we can get an idea of what these kind of serpents must be like. Because they exist. When Prabhupada was speaking on the fifth canto, and he was mentioning these different things, and he was telling the devotees, no, they exist. These creatures actually exist. So let's move on. 34. Translation to 34. Those who are in this life, those who are in this life confine other living entities in dark wells, granaries, or mountain caves. So we heard about those animals that were pigs just now, how they throw them into drums and
carbon dioxide, they put carbon dioxide on them. So this is what we're hearing about here in the Bhagavatam. After death, they are put into the hell known as Avata Nirodhana. They themselves are punished, are pushed into dark wells where poisonous fumes and smoke suffocate them, and they suffer very severely. So through asphyxiation, no, you cannot breathe properly. So you compressed into a drum. We've heard that what they were doing with the piglets, those that are non-productive and those who are sick, they just throw them in the drum. So same thing happens. Because we're trying to figure out, why are these things so extreme like this? Why is this reactions so extreme? Well, we see people are doing extreme things. This is what they're doing also, right? So that warrants that kind of reaction. And then 35, Prabhupada says it, translation. A householder who receives guests or visitors with cruel glances as if to burn them to ashes is put into the hell called Paryavartana, where he is gazed at by hard-eyed vultures, herons, crows, and similar birds would suddenly swoop down and pluck out his eyes with great force. Sure, that must be really powerful experience. Not very nice. So just to give an idea what that must look like, this is just some like a caricature of that experience of the evil look. So we know devotees always have a blissful look. Why? Because they're Jagannath bhaktas. They smile like Jagannath, big beautiful eyes. But this kind of thing is very different what is described here. So you know, if you go to somebody's house and the person looks at you like this, and it's like, everything is in the look. What have you come here? Why have you come to disturb me? I don't like you. Go away. I'm not going to feed you. So it's totally opposite. If you're just having that mood towards somebody who visits you, it's totally Anarian. It's not Vedic to start with. So in the Vedic culture, even an enemy who comes is received properly. We know that from the Mahabharata. Purport, Prabhupada says here, according to the Vedic etiquette, even an enemy who comes to a householder's home should be received in such a gentle way that he forgets that he has come to the home of an enemy. We know this with Yudhisthira, always very courteous. Even after the battle of Kurukshetra in the evenings, the soldiers would stop fighting and they would go to each other's camps. That still bewilders me. How is that, you can be so aggressive and angry during the day, and in the evening it's like, hey, we're friends still, we're family still. So, very different mindset, huh? A guest who comes to one's home should be received very politely. So this is achar, etiquette. If he is unwanted, the householder should not stare at him with blinking eyes, for one who does so will be put into the hell known as Paryavartana after death, and there he may face ferocious birds like vultures, crows, and kokini will suddenly come upon him and pluck out his eyes. So again, this is not for horrific entertainment, although some people are actually watch horror movies to get a thrill out of this kind of thing. But this is to make us realize two things. One, as devotees, we have been redeemed by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. The struggles that he had to go through to give us Krishna consciousness, go to the West, establish it, see it through despite the difficulties. So we've had a great chance, because if we continue like this, we won't go to this place that we're here in. So that is the first part. And the second part is the family business. What's our family business? Preaching. So if we feel indebted, if we feel grateful, if we feel gratitude to being saved from this kind of environment, which we could very well be in. We could have very well been in this kind of situation. So if we feel gratitude for that, then at least try to help others. Just like somebody took the initiative to try to help us. We got a book, we got prasadam, mahaprasadam, we got so many different opportunities to take to Krishna consciousness. And they were patient with us. Right? It's not like we just took the Krishna consciousness like today and tomorrow we're in the temple and we're practicing 16 rounds. No. Whoever cultivated us was patient with us. Like a mother, taking care. Are you okay? Come, we're having a program. That patience is also required. So if we feel indebted, grateful to what Srila Prabhupada has been through and given us, then we will try to also do the same. We will try to also share this knowledge. Like he said, if you feel indebted, if you feel obliged to what I've done, then do as I've done. And the world is in need. You can hear, you heard the video clip, you saw the pictures. It's a reality of life. There's a lot of demoniac forces out there. We don't feel it here. We'll just end on this one. When I was a bhakta, still trying to be a bhakta, but as we call it, terminology. When we were in the early days of Krishna consciousness, one person actually, we were distributing books and prasadam. And he came forward and said, hey, what do you people distribute? He said, well, we have these books on yoga and meditation. And we gave him prasadam. And the next time we were in that area, he came again. And he says, listen, I want to join your whatever you are following, that's very nice and I'd like to join it. And especially the things that you give out to eat. So I said, okay, come to the Sunday program. And he came. And at the temple, he was a very nice person, but there was something like little, you know, when you have that gut instinct that there's something just a little different here. So he was like that kind of person. And he but he was very eager to serve. Any opportunity to serve, wash the pots, clean the temple, mandira marjanam, he was doing it all. But that aspect, he would always be a bit reserved. And the other interesting thing, at night he wouldn't sleep. He would be very restless at night. So the one night I saw that he was very, I said, hey, what's going on? Are you okay? You're having a bad night or what's going on? And then he confessed, he says, you know, I actually practice this kind of ritual where we consume blood. And I said, hey, Prabhu, you know, it's going like 12 o'clock now, you know. Now is not the time to tell me this kind of thing, you know. And he says, no, don't worry. But it's just that I have that desire for that kind of consumption. And I said, hey, you know, you're not going to get any of that here, right? So you better just chant. I can chant with you. Let's try and chant. And then he said, you know what? Can you give me a bolt? You know, the thing that you turn? It's a metal screw kind of thing. So I said, why? He says, because the taste of that is similar to what blood tastes like. So it actually, you know. So when I looked at it, and I looked at it, I said, what kind of people are coming in here, you know? We anybody can just join in like that. So we don't know what backgrounds we come from. Just like we say, you know, we come to Krishna consciousness. How I came to Krishna consciousness? Everybody writes in the BTG, you get some nice articles on that. But does anybody say why they came to Krishna consciousness? Why did you come to Krishna consciousness? What is the background like? We don't know. But if we're honest, many of us must have experienced things like this or been practicing, you know,
unhealthy lifestyles. So Prabhupada has really done a lot to help us to realize and given us a devotional culture. The culture, Sanskriti, the culture of bhakti. So if we take this to heart, practice it, learn from what we've been hearing here from the Bhagavatam, and have a change of heart and feel the compassion of others. Feel that need to try to help others. Everyone has the propensity. Everyone has the potential. Every single devotee has the potential to do something. And if you realize, in the earlier days, many of them, they didn't know anything. But by taking to Prabhupada's words, by trying to do something, ISKCON has grown to this wonderful movement that is going to save the world in future. So we can have a choice to be part of it or to just go with it. And remember, we'll end on this point, that laziness, if you read in the 16th chapter, is actually one of the demoniac qualities. It may sound like a very simple point. Lazy, if somebody is lazy, how is that? But it's actually one of the demoniac qualities. So let's try to do something. Be motivated, be inspired, and try to share what you've learned in Krishna consciousness with those who are innocent. There are many out there. So thank you very much for your attentiveness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanande. So I'll be here for a few minutes. Time is over. If you have any comments or anything you'd like to discuss. Hare Krishna.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Thank you.